I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Learning English branch of the Voice of America in Washington. It's Tuesday, November 24th, 2015. It was on this day in 1950 that a powerful and deadly snowstorm began forming, preparing to hit the northeastern United States and the Appalachians the next day. Pickens, West Virginia, a tiny town, would get 57 inches of snow. The storm would cause the deaths of 353 people. Today on As It Is, we'll tell you about concerns that East Asia is becoming more militarized.
We did have candid discussions on the East and South China Seas, and I reiterated the right of all countries to freedom of navigation and overflight and to unimpeded commerce.
Then, as we always do on Tuesdays, we will bring you the Environment and Science Report. This week, we report on a group of rare white deer that have been protected for half a century. Now, because of possible changes to the land they live on, they might soon be in danger. Then, as we do every weekday, we will present The Making of a Nation. So, you can see, we have a lot for you today, as always. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English because we exist to help you learn everyday American English. We speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Territorial claims have become a stressful issue in East and Southeast Asia over the past few years. There have been conflicts about territory, including the Spratly and Paracel Islands in the South China Sea. Countries dispute ownership, and China continues to increase its claims to areas that those countries also claim. Mario Ritter reports.
President Barack Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke about the issue during Mr. Xi's state visit to the United States. At a joint news conference, President Obama repeated his concerns about the maritime territory.
We did have candid discussions on the East and South China Seas, and I reiterated the right of all countries to freedom of navigation and overflight and to unimpeded commerce.
Mr. Obama said he repeated concerns to Mr. Xi about land reclamation in the South China Sea. He said China's action of filling in land in disputed island areas makes it hard to resolve disputes peacefully with neighbors. President Xi defended China's claim to the area. He said China's construction work on artificial islands in the South China Sea does not target any country. He also said that China doesn't intend to pursue militarization. China claims much of the South China Sea as its territory. However, Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam also claim parts of Western Pacific waters. Over the past 45 years, all these nations have reclaimed land in the South China Sea. but their efforts are small compared to the 1,200 hectares reclaimed by China in the past 18 months. The sea is important as a waterway for international trade. It is estimated that 40% of world trade passes through the South China Sea. Free navigation of its waters is highly important. The sea is important for its resources, too. It contains important fisheries and is also believed to hold oil and natural gas reserves. China has accessed a large share of these resources. It dominates the region economically and geographically. It has built military bases on islands in the sea that include docks and airstrips. China is not alone in building an airstrip on islands in the sea, but its runways are large enough for military aircraft. This has worried its neighbors and the U.S. that China wants to control this area. The U.S. has said it is committed to open and free shipping in the area. Efforts by a group of Asian countries called ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, have not solved the issue. China is not a member of ASEAN, and the group is split. Countries with claims in the South China Sea want to enforce a code of conduct, but countries without claims are unwilling to push for that requirement. China's military presence looms large in the area. The country's military budget, officially at $145 billion, increased 10% in 2015. Many new weapons were on display at the recent World War II anniversary parade. They included the Dongfeng 21D missile, called the Carrier Killer, by Chinese media. China has an aircraft carrier base on Hainan Island in the South China Sea. In July, China accused the United States of militarizing the area because of U.S. surveillance patrols and joint military exercises with allies like the Philippines. Japan's constitution renounces war as a way to settle international disputes. On September 18th, the Japanese government changed laws relating to its constitution that allow Japan's self-defense forces to fight outside the country with allies even if Japan is not under attack. The changes were passed by a coalition of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's Liberal Democratic Party and the Kometo Party. The changes caused large protests and sharp disagreement in Parliament. One public opinion study found that 54% opposed the bills, while 29% supported updating the Constitution. But Japan's neighbors, China and North and South Korea, were skeptical. Those countries have painful historical memories of Japanese occupation and colonization before World War II. China's official People's Daily Overseas Edition wrote that Prime Minister Abe had brought huge uncertainty to the security situation in the Asia-Pacific region. Jeff Kingston is director of Asian Studies at Temple University in Tokyo. He said Prime Minister Abe had not helped the public understand the new bills. China and Japan disagree over who owns islands in the Sea of Japan, called Senkaku by Japan and Diaoyu by China. Neighboring South Korea also claims islands known as Dokdo in Korea and Takeshima in Japan. I'm Mario Ritter.
Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you. and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English Branch headquarters in Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. In the 1940s, the U.S. Army fenced 40 kilometers of wilderness in central New York and turned it into a weapons depot. By chance, the fencing enclosed a community of rare white deer and protected them from hunters and predators for more than 60 years. The refuge is near Seneca Lake, a resort area. White deer are rare in most places around the world because they are easy to spot against green or brown forest backgrounds. It makes them a good target for hunters and animal predators like coyotes and wolves. The white deer lived undisturbed in their enclosure. Their numbers increased as the years passed. The white deer passed along their unique genes to their offspring and thrived. There are about 200 white deer and 600 brown deer on the military base. The storage area for military weapons stayed active until 2000. After the depot was closed, the Army Corps of Engineers took over, cleaned up the land, and made it more useful. The depot is supposed to be clean and ready for sale next year. Activists say they want to protect the deer. They say they fear that the fences will be torn down when the property is sold. That might put the white deer in danger. Dennis Money is working to protect the deer. His group, called Seneca White Deer Incorporated, can protect the deer by buying the property. If Seneca White Deer buys about 1,000 hectares, the deer will be safe, the group says. It might offer guided tours, so visitors from around the world can see the rare deer. The Seneca County Industrial Development Agency received the rights to the land when the Army withdrew. The agency is a public corporation set up by New York State that promotes business development in the county. The Army turned parcels of land over to the development agency. The agency sold them to local businesses. A prison and a law enforcement center have been built on the land. White deer are seen as special animals. Native Americans believe they are a blessing. In Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio, hunters and civic workers shot and killed white deer in an effort to reduce the deer population. Local residents were furious. Scientists say the deer are not albino. They just lack pigment in their fur. And that's the Environment and Science Report. Keep listening for the VOA Learning English History Program, The Making of a Nation. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 2 years of a bitter, bloody civil war started to show their effects on both the Confederate States of the South and the Union States of the North. Both sides began to feel the pressure of the costly struggle. The South, however, felt the pressure more severely because it was weaker in troop strength and industrial strength. This week in our series, Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles discuss the early summer of 1863 in the American Civil War.
In 1863, the Confederate States were becoming short of supplies. Food and guns were difficult to find to keep the Confederate armies in the field. Men were also needed, more and more men. There seemed to be no end to the demand for men to fill the places left empty by dead and wounded soldiers. Many in the South were heavy of heart, and hope among them slowly started to sink. The war was tiring. Its suffering was more than they could bear, and the situation in the West made matters worse. Union armies were on the move in the states of Mississippi and Tennessee. Their successes were becoming a serious threat. They might soon win control of the whole Mississippi River. This would split the states of the Confederacy and might end its very existence. Something was needed to raise up the spirits of the South, to break the pressure of Union armies.
General Robert E. Lee believed that he had the answer, an invasion of the North. This, he felt, would throw fear into the people of the North and weaken the Union war effort. Lee had organized an army of 75,000 men at Fredericksburg, Virginia, halfway between Washington and Richmond. Lee began moving his men June 3rd. They marched northwest into the Shenandoah Valley. The valley led north to the Potomac River. Across the river was the narrow neck of western Maryland, then Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was the target. Its rich farmland produced plenty of food, enough to feed Lee's hungry army for the summer.
Standing in the way of Lee's army was a small Union force at Winchester in Northern Virginia. There were only 7,000 Union soldiers, and they had no idea that the Confederate army was nearby. The Confederates easily defeated them. More than half of the Union troops were captured. The others fled. Now, there was nothing to stop Lee from marching into Pennsylvania. The huge Army of the Potomac was behind him, near Washington. The Union commander, General Hooker, had to keep the army between Lee and Washington to prevent the Confederates from seizing the national capital.
Lee's army crossed western Maryland and entered Pennsylvania. His soldiers found the Pennsylvania countryside very different from Virginia's. Virginia had been a battleground for 2 years, and the land showed it. Many of its farms had been destroyed. Its stores were empty. Pennsylvania had not been touched by the war. Its big farms were rich. Its towns and villages were full of food and goods of all kinds. The hungry, poorly clothed soldiers could not believe their eyes. This was the land of the enemy, they cried, and they could take whatever they wished. But General Lee said no. He said supplies could be taken only by Confederate supply officers. And, he said, they must pay in Confederate money for everything they took.
Lee did not want to anger these people in Pennsylvania. Many of them did not support the Union war effort. Some of the rich farmers said openly that they did not care who won the war. They said they only wanted to be left alone. Lee was sure that many in the North felt the same way. There had been signs that people were growing tired of the war. Coal miners in eastern Pennsylvania had shown their feelings toward the war a few months earlier. They rose up against a new law drafting men into the Union Army. The miners did not want to fight. They refused to join the army. They rioted and attacked officials who tried to take them. Soldiers were sent to the mining areas to put down the riots.
Farmers in nearby Ohio also rebelled against the draft law. They refused to be drafted. Instead, they took guns and battled soldiers who came to arrest them. Feelings against the war were growing stronger, not only in Pennsylvania and Ohio, but also in several other farm states of the North. These areas saw a growing support for a peace party, a political party opposed to the war. Leaders of this movement were Democrats called Copperheads. They got this name because they wore on their coats a copper penny with the head of an Indian.
The chief Copperhead was a former Ohio congressman. His name was Clement Vallandigham. As a member of Congress, Vallandigham criticized the war and the Republicans. He told them, "The war for the Union is, in your hands, a most bloody and costly failure. War for the Union was abandoned, and war for the Negro was openly begun with stronger effort than before." "With what success?" Vallandigham asked. "Let the dead at Fredericksburg and Vicksburg answer." Vallandigham said he wanted peace, and he wanted it immediately. He offered a simple program. Stop the fighting, make a ceasefire, and let some friendly foreign nation negotiate peace between North and South.
After he lost his seat in Congress, Vallandigham opened a campaign to become governor of Ohio. He traveled all across the state, speaking out against the war. He said Republicans did not want peace. He said they wanted to fight until every black man was free. The Union military commander for Ohio was General Ambrose Burnside, a former commander of the Army of the Potomac. After losing the Battle of Fredericksburg, Lincoln removed Burnside as Army commander and sent him to Ohio. Burnside was worried. Too many people in Ohio opposed the war. He believed that much of what was being said and done in Ohio was close to the crime of treason.
Burnside announced several new measures to quiet the opponents of the war. One of these orders limited the right of citizens to criticize government military policy. Another declared that statements of support for the enemy would be punished as treason. Vallandigham refused to recognize Burnside's right to give such orders to civilians. On May 1st, he made a campaign speech to a big crowd at Mount Vernon, Ohio. He denounced Burnside's orders and spoke of the president as King Lincoln. Vallandigham claimed that Lincoln was using the war to become a dictator. He said Lincoln did not want peace, that the president had rejected peace offers from the South. Once again, he said the war was not a struggle for the Union, but a fight to free the slaves of the South. And he said, "Men of Ohio, who let themselves be drafted into the Union Army, were no better than slaves themselves."
Burnside had sent several army officers to listen to the speech. When they reported what Vallandigham said, Burnside ordered his arrest. Without question, the man had violated the general's orders. Late the next night, soldiers went to Vallandigham's home in Dayton. They knocked on the door and said they had come to arrest him. Vallandigham called for help and refused to let the soldiers enter. They broke down the door, seized him, and took him to a military prison in Cincinnati. A few days later, Vallandigham went on trial before a military court in Cincinnati. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.